Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Happy Juneteenth, the federal holiday marking the day Union troops finally reached Texas, the last state in the Confederacy with slavery, to tell enslaved people there that slavery had been ended 2 years earlier. Well, on this day, we have a story that also has layers of emancipation. It's the story of a black woman who walked away from her slave owner in upstate New York in 1828, carrying an infant child. And then later, she incredibly won a lawsuit to free her 9-year-old son. Her name was Isabella Van Wagenen, but she later changed that to one of the most lyrical in American history, Sojourner Truth. Yes, the iconic abolitionist and women's rights advocate. The trial documents were missing until an archivist doing unrelated research stumbled on the papers in the Ulster County Courthouse in Kingston, New York. So let's start with that archivist, Jim Foltz. Jim, welcome.
Thank you.
You were actually looking for something else. What was it that caught your eye?
I was looking for an example of a writ of habeas corpus, and I was looking through a file for 1828, and I was struck by the name of a woman. The person making the complaint was Isabella Van Wagenen.
Did that ring a bell with you?
Yes, it did, because she's, of course, a famous figure in American history, African-American history, known by almost everyone as Sojourner Truth. She was living with the Van Wagenen family. She had escaped from her owner. They had taken her in. She was working for them.
As Quakers, they were also abolitionists and were helping her out. She took their name. Good for you for recognizing that. Yeah. And what do they look like? What do you see there?
You know, old documents, 19th, 18th, 17th century, written with quill pens, with iron gall ink on rag paper. Imagine brown and beige.
Yeah.
The ink was originally darker. It's faded with time. And all the documents are there. The writ of habeas corpus, Isabella's complaint about her son being sold into slavery.
She made the case that this was an illegal sale at that time in history.
That's correct. Isabella was actually free at the time of her lawsuit in 1828. Her son, however, under an act of 1799, was bound as an indentured servant till he was 21 years old. His current owner sold him away for probably a good profit. That was the illegal act that warranted a writ of habeas corpus.
Yeah. We know that she, you know, she was an author, but that's because she dictated a book later on. She couldn't read or write. Where is she on that page?
She signed with an X. The deposition that she marked corroborates and confirms the details of her published autobiography, but adds new details about when it happened, who was involved, the legal mechanism that was available and for recovering her son, and the process by which it happened.
Yeah.
It's the last piece of the puzzle of a story that was partially known and is far better known now with these documents.
Well, Jim Foltz, congratulations on your find, because as we're about to hear, this really is, you know, quite a powerful piece of paper. Jim Foltz, head of research services at the New York State Archives, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, let's bring in Dr. Nell Irvin Painter, a Princeton historian and author of Sojourner Truth, A Life, A Symbol. She wasted no time in getting herself to Kingston, New York to see these documents. Professor Nell, what was it like to walk into the Ulster County Courthouse the same steps Sojourner Truth walked and to see these papers?
It was so dramatic. It was so moving. Part of it is just thinking about the bravery it took for Isabella, as she was known at the time. She was only about 3 or 4 years out of slavery, so she was a poor working class woman going up against county elites, a black woman and a woman. At that time, women didn't have legal rights. Black people hardly had legal rights. The world was stacked against her, but she had religion on her side.
Mm. Well, let's just give a little context. She was born in 1797 to enslaved parents.
About that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. sold several times, once for $100 along with a flock of sheep. And she'd ended up with John Dumont, who had promised her her freedom. And when he didn't grant it, she walked, holding her infant daughter.
She did.
She left her children behind because they were legally still tied to him as indentured servants. How
That's right.
gut-wrenching.
Gut-wrenching only begins. We know the story of human trafficking, and we know how traumatic human trafficking is. But this is a time in which the sale of children was perfectly legal. She was seizing on a part of the law, New York state law, that said people who were indentured or who were freed could not be sold into permanent servitude.
What else do we see in these papers that projects the Sojourner Truth who's to come? I mean, you mentioned her spirituality. She's the one who argued when people said women can't have rights as men because Christ wasn't a woman. Where did Christ come from? From God and a woman.
Yes.
Man had nothing
yes.
to do with it. But what else do we see in her fighting this battle for the woman who's to come?
What we see is initiative. And that is so amazing, given the way the power was stacked against her. And we see that over and over and over again in her mm-hmm. life.
Yeah. And her actual life is so huge and iconic that there's been some myth attached to it. So could you help us here? It's been said that Lincoln invited her to the White House because of her abolitionist work. It's been said that when she was speaking about women's rights, she said that, you know, now infamous line, "Ain't I a woman?" What's
Don't get me started.
Okay.
My biography is called Sojourner Truth, A Life, A Symbol, because we have made this extraordinary American a symbol for whatever we need over 150 years. Abraham Lincoln did not invite her. She went with another abolitionist, and at the time, the president treated her like you might expect. You know, he called her auntie, and he didn't have any sense of how important she was.
And what about the statement, "Ain't I a woman," which,
okay,
yeah, go ahead.
Don't even say it. The account 12 years afterwards said, "Aren't I a woman?" In the 20th century, the statement was improved to make her more authentic and perhaps more Southern by changing it to "Ain't I a woman?" She did not say either. Her whole life is a testament to the importance of all people, women, working women, Black women, having their human and citizenship rights, but not the slogan.
Back to these documents. She gets Peter back, but Peter has been so traumatized that he has a terrible, you know, time.
This is true. Peter had detached after the trauma of being sold and resold and beaten. When he came back, his mother was totally distressed because he was bearing the scars of the violence that's necessary to enforce slavery. She took him to New York City with her and found him work, as many young men did, white men, Black men, Native men, on whaling ships in Nantucket, but he disappeared at sea. But I want to clarify one thing. Mm. The story is not new, but a quarter of a century ago, it was not news. And Juneteenth has only been nationally celebrated for a few years in the wake of the George Floyd uprising. For me, the news here is that it is news.
Yeah.
A quarter of a century ago, it would not have been news.
Hmm. What was it like to see the X, the archivist in Albany, said, "This is it right here. This is her DNA on this paper."
This is so moving because everything we have in text of Sojourner Truth is mediated through other people. But in writing, this is what we have from her directly. It's very moving.
Historian Nell Irvin Painter, her book, Sojourner Truth, A Life, A Symbol. And we're talking about the recently discovered documents of Sojourner Truth's 1828 lawsuit to free her enslaved 9-year-old. Nell, thank you.
Thank you.